Welcome in to the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Got an interesting show for you guys today. I got the pleasure when I was out at Michigan Paracon to meet a very interesting person who has a very interesting career. And I'll tell you that not just because the man's on television, but because the man has had an interesting life. Some of us are blessed to be able to have paranormal experiences when we're young. Some of us just kind of meander with our eyes closed through the universe, and let's just say we bump into things as we encounter them. The man we're about to talk to today grew up in an area we'll just affectionately call Monsterland. We'll find out more about Monsterland as we go on throughout the program. You may say, well, Tim, what's Monsterland? Patience, folks. I'll tell you what it is in just a moment. You may have seen this man on Travel Channel. You may have seen him on Discovery Plus. He's on a show called Expedition Bigfoot. He's also been on Paranormal Caught on Camera and on Conjuring Kesha. Our guest today is Ronnie LeBlanc. He stars in the monster and record-breaking hit Expedition Bigfoot, as I've mentioned, which is heading into its fourth season slated for early 2023. Ronnie is a researcher. He's an author. He's got two books out there, one of which we're going to talk about mainly today, Monsterland, Encounters with UFOs, Bigfoot, and Orange Orbs. He's got a follow-up book out there as well, Monsterland, Shamans, Sasquatch, Synchronicity, and High Strangeness. He's a regular speaker and researcher. Ronnie gives lectures at Bigfoot, UFO, and paranormal conferences and conventions around the country. We met at Michigan Paracon. I had the pleasure of being right across from him all weekend and seeing the man at work, which was fascinating, I got to tell you that. He grew up in Leominster, Massachusetts, which is what we'll talk about today. Ronnie learned of a section of the city near his childhood home that was called Monsterland, which is also what we're going to talk about today. And let's bring him in right now. Let's welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town paranormal radio show, Ronnie LeBlanc. Ronnie, thank you, my friend, for being with us today.
Hey, Tim, how's it going?
Hey, how you doing? Let's just start out by saying, and I want to say, I was fascinated to see you operating at Michigan Paracon and to see not only the way that you talk to people about their interests in Bigfoot and UFOs, but the passion of which you talked about the subjects. And it could be said that, and you know, my discussion with Brian J. Cano last week, there's sometimes when you get to a certain status in the field where people lose their passion for the subject, I think because it's addressed over and over and over again, it's kind of like their passion is scabbed over because it's dealt with so often. So I'm going to ask this right off the bat, Ronnie, what keeps your passion or your fire stoked for this subject, especially since you've been dealing with it since such a young age?
You know, it's weird. It's this magnetic pull. And there's times when I try to get away from it, the paranormal, and just take a break, and things just come slamming back. So it's been an interesting path where I didn't really start out in this direction. But what keeps the passion going is things keep on happening. Mm-hmm. When you start to kind of doubt and question, I'll have another experience that just kind of like realigns me, resets my focus. And things happen here at my house where we just moved a year ago, right near Leominster State Forest, and our property abuts Barrett State Park. And you know, we just had an incident where we have a metal shed that just keeps on getting, seemingly when we're outside, rocks are hitting it. And loud bangs. Look around, there's nobody there. And this is prior to acorns starting to fall down on the shed. And so this went on for about a month. We're just kind of dismissed it. And then acorns started falling. And then my wife was outside on the back porch. And she was talking to her sister. And she started hearing some loud crashing coming from the woods. And she's looking into the woods to see what the hell's going on. Doesn't see anything, but then this huge rock comes flying out of the woods. Like, she described it like a major league pitcher. Like, there was no arc to this thing. It was a straight rocket bullet to our shed, and it hit with a loud bang. Actually made a dent and a hole in the shed, from the impact.
Jeez.
And the interesting thing is, what I'm getting at is, we've had this, you know, Bigfoot activity around our property. My wife last summer witnessed a, what can be best described, and she slammed on the brakes at 9:30 at night, felt like she was going to crash into this thing crossing the road. It was a tall 7-foot spectral figure on two legs that walked out of the woods across the road and up the other woods. And she described she could almost see through it, and it looked like static electricity on your TV set, is wow. How she described it.
Really?
And yeah, and this is on the other side of our property. About 9 years ago, there was a report from a tow truck driver of a Bigfoot hairy man-like creature that ran across the road at 2 a.m. in front of the truck. So we've had a lot of, interestingly enough, these encounters and activity with Bigfoot type creatures, out here. They also have Pukwudgies, which are smaller type beings that are famous for the Bridgewater Triangle. So Monsterland and the Bridgewater Triangle are very, very similar in respect to the activity that they have, the Native American history, the proposed, you know, reported curse that has soaked the land from the Native Americans. And this area just is plagued with UFOs and strange lights. And it just, something that I grew up with and not, you know, coming to grips with it, because I grew up as a Christian. I still, you know, believe in God, but I believe in, you know, I think a little bit more Buddhist kind of mindset and philosophy, but just things that happened growing up that others might deem as being evil, you know, mm-hmm, but there's mm-hmm. things that we just don't understand that now I look back and go, whoa, that was a UFO experience. Or that was an experience with a shadow person or a cloaked Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. In my case, growing up when I was about 11. So, it's hard to get away from it out here. That's for sure.
You tell a very interesting story in the book Monsterland: Encounters with UFOs, Bigfoot, and Orange Orbs. And it's really your first experience. And I got to ask, because there's some rationales here. And keep in mind, when we're all young, Ronnie, we do some things that we, when we're older, we question, why did I do that? And really, in sure. your first experience, you talk about the edge of, I'm trying to remember the name of the forest that you're at, but you're on your bike. And yes. you get that feeling, and we all have that intuitive feeling that there's danger ahead. But you decide to investigate, because we're all kids and we're all curious, and we need to mm-hmm. know. If you could pick it up from here for me.
Sure. Let's just say that... I may have read about 7 Hardy Boys novels leading up to this thing that kind of stirred up my courage, because every time I went by this, every time I went by this freaking trail, and I would make my way to Monsterland, which was where the power lines, the huge power lines were behind the woods, and there were sand dunes. So kids would go there and ride dirt bikes and four wheelers, and you'd have parties. Mm-hmm. And it was also a Lover's Lane type spot. Mm-hmm. So whenever I would go, we either would go with a group of us and we ride the trails by my house, which were behind the Fallbrook School, and through the power lines you could get to Monsterland. And oftentimes they're already there ahead of me or ahead of time, and I show up by myself. And I would go by this particular trail that had this opening, and it just gives me like this feeling every time. And I would look at it and it was almost like, nope, pedal a little faster. And just one of those days where I was like, you know what? I'm going to see what this, what's going on. Why am I feeling this way? And I felt courageous that day, like 11 years old. So I go down the trail and, the way the trees, the canopy was, it just created, it was, you know, a beautiful day, but it was almost like you entered this other world really, where it was dark. I noticed right away as I was pedaling in with my bike that there was an absence of any type of sound, bird noises. You would see squirrels running about, very eerily quiet, and to the point where I could hear like my pedals squeaking. And we all have that feeling like we're being watched, which they call scopethesia. They say like 90% of people experience this feeling. So that tells me that, you know, you have eyes in the back of your head, but our senses definitely pick up on a predator or some kind of threat. And I was definitely starting to feel that, to the point that I stopped on the trail and I put both feet on, you know, either side, and had the bike in the middle of me. So my feet were on the ground. And the trail kind of came a little bit more narrower. It came to almost like a choke point. So it just felt a little bit less like safe, and felt like I was walking into an ambush situation. And right then I started questioning, like, what the heck am I doing here? But for whatever reason, I just looked forward straight and I was just listening. And then it was almost like my mind knew before it was going to even happen, kind of thing. Like, just wait, don't move, watch, the show's about to start, you know?
Yep.
And sure enough, to the left of the trail, the forest, which green, thick, you can't see about 5 feet deep, erupts. And I see like little trees moving and brushing, and I could, my feet on the ground, I could feel stomping through the forest floor. And I was like, oh, and I'm waiting to see what's coming out, gripping the handlebars of the bike. Nothing comes out on the trail. Comes on the trail, there's nothing, I can't see anything. Then on the other side of the trail, like, it goes into the other side of the woods, that goes crazy. And I can, and I'm like, what the fuck, what is going on, you know? And I can't see anything, but I know to get the hell out of there. And I should have seen an elephant. I should have seen a moose.
Yeah.
That's how big this thing sounded and felt. And I took off and I pedaled so fast, didn't go to Monsling, went right back home. I was a big outdoors kid. I'd be gone as soon as the sun, I'm gone.
Yep.
Fishing, playing in the brook, woods, pond, whatever. And I don't come back till the end of the day, till sundown.
Yep.
And I knew all the animals in the forest. I didn't for once think Bigfoot. And that didn't cross my mind. I just thought, like, this had to be some kind of an animal, but why didn't I see it? So that was very perplexing to me, and something that my mind couldn't wrap its head around, but I just dismissed it after a while. And it didn't resurface until, 25 years later, really, when I got back here to Leominster. I was out in California for a little while for school and working out there, and moved back home. And a couple found some interesting prints in Leominster State Forest, and that really set the whole thing just went nuts from that point. Like, it was just like, this was lined up and meant to be, the timing of that. And that set me on this journey of writing the book and doing the show and doing conferences and just trying to, I think, bring the other strange side of Bigfoot to light, where it's been kind of pushed aside in UFO reports and Bigfoot reports. And I think we need to bring that stuff back into the fray for us to understand this whole mystery, because I think we're taking out pieces that are important to see the puzzle, you know?
Right. Now, had other kids been in that forest and said they'd seen something similar, or had you kept it under wraps and not talked to other kids about it because you didn't want them to think you were nuts?
I don't think I told anybody.
Yeah.
I don't think I told anybody. It was probably one of the most terrifying experiences. Again, still just felt, you know, the best way I could describe it to people is, if you've seen the movie Predator with Arnold Schwarzenegger, It was something invisible cloaking in front of me that was there that I couldn't see. I didn't see any type of shimmering effect or anything like that. But it just didn't make sense. And other kids growing up, interestingly, we never really talked too much about different things, but a lot of my friends now talk about having experiences with UFOs and lights and sleep paralysis and waking up outside in their underwear with lights up on the hill, missing time. And then other people as well that have been in the forest, you know, in the 70s and 60s, and seeing creatures. One gentleman was with several kids. They're out in the Montsalan area, and he described a caveman coming out of the swamp, like was in the swamp coming towards them, and they screamed and freaked out, you know. So there's a lot of interesting stories, and a lot of it's believed that there's a vortex or a portal in Leominster State Forest because of the high propensity of people seeing all these UFOs. And if they're, you know, I just watched something with Jack Vallée, and something I echo a lot is we always think of, you know, aliens. So they have to be light years away. It would take them so long to get here.
Yeah.
Well, not if they're interdimensional, if they're extra dimensional, they could just kind of pop in, pop out. And that's what people have experienced with these, orange orbs materializing, and dematerializing, showing up at night during the day. We had a really cool 4th of July is a big time where people see these orange balls of light because we're looking up for fireworks.
Yep.
And there might be something that they're attracted to the lights as well, but we watched, we went to an event and I brought my binoculars almost in anticipation of seeing something. And, it was during the day and everyone's watching the stage where there's a band. And then I noticed there's an orange orb floating and flying over. And I looked at it in the binoculars. You can see it swirling and radiating and all this stuff. It's like, what? This is a drone.
Yeah.
I hand it to my friend and he's looking at it. He's like, oh my God, what the? And I'm watching it as he's watching it, binoculars, and it just goes, disappears. Like it went behind some invisible door and just vanished. And he was like, what shit, you know? And we watched three of them come and follow that same path. And people just, you know, there's ideas are around these things. Like, are these orbs, you know, we talk about Native Americans back in the day, the shamans could transform themselves in balls of light so they could traverse long distances. And is Bigfoot, do they have this ability to transform themselves into these balls of light and do these things? Because they seem to show up in and around when there's Bigfoot activity, and not just these orange lights, as green ones, blue ones, but it could be a way of how not only Bigfoot, but these other aliens are moving around and in our 3D space. It's interesting.
I do want to ask you, Ronnie, as long as we're on this subject, and you mentioned that you had studied a little more Eastern religious philosophy as you were getting of age and kind of coming of age in your theological study. As you know, there are some Eastern philosophies that believe when you pass, you exit your body as an orb of light. I think you know where I'm going with this question.
Yeah.
And that is, as you're seeing these orange orbs in the sky, what is the difference between an orange orb that may be in the sky that may potentially be an entity of some sort that's passing into a portal or a dimension, and say an orb of a soul that's leaving the body, or traditionally a theological orb of a soul that's leaving or coming back to address a relative or a loved one and then leaving? Because there is a strong theological belief, especially in Eastern countries, that you can see a physical light orb of a relative that will leave and come back in the short time after death, just to address a family member or a loved one.
Yeah. Yeah. The interesting thing is with I had an experience with my sister passed away of cancer 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
She was my baby sister. And I went to my parents' house, and just to give you a distinction between the two different orbs, these orange orbs, my wife experienced one in our old house when we first moved in. This is like 18 years ago. And it was a small light, the size of a little bit less small than my fist, that was orange, that was flying around. She was trying to wake me up and she couldn't wake me up, but this thing was flying around.
Oh, wow.
My daughter woke up in the middle of the night, saw this thing glowing in her room, and she took a picture of it. And I got to find the picture, but it's a fireball floating in midair.
Mm-hmm.
And then these orange orbs that I've seen in the sky and around are the size of a basketball, and they look like a sun.
Okay.
When I was talking with different people about seeing these white orbs that they're capturing, not only outside but inside their house flying around, I met a Reiki healer, as well as she was working with the angelic realms. And at first I'm very open-minded.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so when she was talking to me about it, I was just trying to, you know, suspension of disbelief, you know, where it's just kind of like, okay.
Yep.
And so I did try something. She told me to go out with my phone at night. Don't use a flash. Consciously send out that thought that you want to see them and capture something. And so I was at my parents' house. I was picking up my kids. It was nighttime. This is where my sister passed away, at my parents' house. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't expecting to necessarily experience her, but an orb. So I kind of called out, hey, I want to see you. Can I take a picture? You know, vocally spoke it out, mentally projected it. And I took a series of five pictures. And on that fifth photo, you know, there's nothing taken. And then an orb flies through the screen and takes up the entire, like, right through the entire image. And what was amazing is I was looking through the camera as I was taking the pictures. And, and you see the picture for a second, and then that last picture, I went like this. And I took the picture, and then I saw this flash from the corner of my eye.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, did I put the flash on? And then I didn't look at it until I got back home, because I was like, I'm not going to look. And so I got the kids in. My kids were like, what were you just doing? I'm like, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I get home, I look at the picture, and there's this orb. I'll send it to you so you can show it.
Sure. Yeah.
Goes across the screen, and I sent a note to the Reiki master, to tell her. And she said, wow. She goes, I just got your full name just got popped in my mind about 5 minutes ago. I'm like, what do you mean? She said, about 5 minutes ago, your name, came into my mind. And usually when that happens, they're telling me that that person's going to be in contact with me. And she's like, 5 minutes later, you're sending me a message. So I sent her the picture and I told her what happened. And, she was like, oh my God, it's amazing. And my daughter Lena was with me, and we looked in the doorway, and suddenly there was a white being that appeared. I could just see, when people see a shadow person, this was made of light, white light, that had the same size as a human, mm-hmm. but just appeared in the doorway, like came on like full, and then just disappeared.
Oh, wow.
And my daughter, I didn't say anything. My daughter goes, Dad, did you just see that light being just, I'm like, whoa. So it showed up right after and talked about the angelic realms and you know, capturing this orb. So yeah, and that's what gets me so passionate about it, is that, you know, there's more to this life. This is kind of like, we're passing through.
Yeah.
You know, we're spirits, having a physical experience, you know? And so I think that's what's exciting, that there's this, we get to kind of continue what we're doing, and we don't know exactly what that may be or what, you know, but
yeah,
there's something more to this than it's just, I don't believe that once we're done, our consciousness and all of our experiences just fucking evaporate.
Yeah.
I think there's something with that. It's the Akashic records and that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's kind of spooky moments too. I don't know how many psychics you've seen, but I've had some spooky moments with psychics where they tell me some stuff and it
sure
resonates pretty easily. And people, I mean, on the skeptical side, you know, people say, well, you can be Googled or things can be found about you.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's some stuff that I've been told that nobody would ever know about me. I mean, just no way. And that's kind of intriguing, you know, there's stuff that can be, you know, There's different things that can be shown to you in different ways that you just, there's just no explaining.
Well, you know, there's a Chris Duncan who we had on Expedition Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. I brought him in for, we had him for season two. He brought in the electromagnetic loop antenna. He was working with Raytheon. He's a major in the U.S. Army, working on his PhD. And he helped us to try to pinpoint every living being is off this electromagnetic signature. And he was able to identify these primate signatures in Kentucky, of all places. And but when I learned about his ability to do remote viewing, and he got trained by the guys that started this program, basically, mm-hmm. CIA guys. And what was interesting is bringing him into the show for season three to try to introduce, no one's had used remote viewing in the search for Bigfoot. And I was like, this would be cool. Let's try to do this.
Yeah.
And I pitched it to the producers, and the network was like, let's do it. They didn't know how it was going to work out. But what was amazing with him is he did a test, like both Mariah and Russ tested Chris. And to your point about knowing something, he just said, you know, basically put something in your mind of an experience you had in a place that you're at, and I'll try to describe it to you. And, you know, what he did was basically pull from their memories, both Russ and Maria. So he somehow tapped into, you know, their memories of these experiences and visually retold them where they were, you know, what it looked like, and they confirmed, you know, like, so this stuff works, and I'm a believer in this. And it was amazing because I believe in him so much. The fact that when I was describing the rock being thrown at the shed and my wife being out there, I immediately went out there and I could feel like the energy was definitely different. Like, I was like, whoa. So I texted Chris. I said, bro, I need you to remote view right now. And I gave him my address, and he remote viewed, and he's like, he goes, you're on to something. And I'm like, because I said, I told him what just happened. I go, you know why I'm asking you. I want to see if you can see if there's a freaking Bigfoot over here.
Yeah.
He's like, I got a juvenile something throwing rocks at your shed. And every time it throws, it runs and hides. And there's a parental figure watching it do this. They're trying to taunt you.
Whoa.
And so I was like, holy S, you know, like, and unbeknownst to Chris is I had a psychic medium come out several years ago. She's in my second book. And she came to Barrett Park where I live right next to.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, yeah, they're coming down from Lump State Forest, and they're coming down to feed at the pond. There's freshwater clams and all this. So it's pretty exciting because now I feel like I have a habituation kind of situation at my house where I'm like, okay. But what I've heard from other researchers like Scott Carpenter, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He's,
yeah. Yeah.
I believe he's out of Tennessee.
Okay.
He stopped Bigfooting because the high strangeness, they were starting to come into his house.
Oh no.
They were starting to show up, peeking into his neighbor's windows, causing a lot of paranormal kind of stuff that he deems as almost like evil. And so I had seen a post of his, you know, 6 months ago on social, just explaining what was going on. And so that's the interesting piece now, because I also talked to a gentleman last week who came to one of my presentations at the library, Lunenburg. And there's two locations in US,
mm-hmm.
that have confirmed habituation, and his house is one of them. He's in central Massachusetts, and he has them coming up and banging on his walls looking for food, and he leaves them sandwiches, and he has them coming into his house, showing up cloaked, showing up in shadow form, and he's worried what else is coming in here, not just them, what else could be coming in, you know?
So they're bringing in strays.
I mean, so he's had the BRFRO investigated there. He's had other friends of mine that are investigators investigate, and he's like, they're like, yeah, there's some crazy stuff going on over here. But he's, I, you know, open to it, and he's has, you know, all the stuff. And and I was just up in Maine too, and saw some pretty compelling videos from a researcher of a family group, a mom, a dad, and a little baby Bigfoot running on this trail, but a mile away, you can see them. Another video too. And you can just see the proportions. You're like, that's not human. Arms go almost past the knees. So it's exciting because it's, I think we're at a moment in time, right, where with UFOs and all that, Bigfoot is right there. It's the number two for me, like, and for everybody, I think, on the, those mysteries. I think something's coming around the corner here, and I'm hoping from what we're doing with the show and stacking up stuff, we help in bringing that to light. But I don't think it's going to be us. I really feel like it's going to be somebody just out there and capture something amazing, you know. Ron, so that's what's awesome about this whole thing,
Ronnie, you know? I gotta ask you, you left a lot out on the table there, brother. I gotta ask you, you have Bigfoot at your back door taunting you, throwing stuff against your house. I gotta ask what's going through your brain here. Okay, so it's taunting you. Has it run through your head as to why it's taunting you? Why does it want you to come out and play? Does it want you to feed them? Does it want you to invite them in? Does it?
It's okay. So that's a good question. I feel like, you know, my wife is pretty convinced that, you know, they want me to kind of get to that next level, and whether that's like engaging with them or what have you. But, two things when it comes to consciousness, and I'll explain this, but like, I went to the Michigan UFO conference, Deb and RJ's, right? Like, yep, a month after we were at Paracon.
Yep.
I came home that morning. RJ and Deb did Reiki, just kind of help align me and everything. And we had this activity prior to me going. And so when I got home, it was like 5 in the morning, 4 in the morning, couldn't sleep, went outside in the backyard. And remember I told you, like, there's times where I'm like, oh, I want to be done with all of this. Like, I'm done. Yeah. Taking a break.
Yeah.
And then the universe is like, nope, you know?
Yep.
I was sitting on the porch and I didn't say a word, but just mentally was like, to whatever's out in the backyard, you know, I'm done with this. I'm taking a break, whatever. I said, I'm done. I go, if this is real, hit the shed right now. If this is real, hit the shed right, boom, instantly. And I was like, holy crap. I mean, a rock nailed that shed so loud it rang like a bell that my daughter opened her window from upstairs and goes, Dad.
Oh.
So the kids are aware of all this kind of craziness going on. But that shook me to my soul because I'm like, okay, this thing heard my thoughts and responded like instantly, not, hey, I asked it and 30 minutes later or something. No, I'm talking within seconds.
Mm.
And that kind of put a bit of the fear of God in me, because then I'm like, okay, we're dealing with something that's a lot more powerful than us, you know, a lot more enlightened or what have you. Is there a coincidence? Could that have happened the same? Of course. But I always do these like little experiments to see. Mm-hmm. And so an example of this in talking about those lights and how that they may be connected, I talk about a friend of mine who we call him Tom because he doesn't want his identity known.
Sure.
He lives outskirts of Leominster State Forest. Started witnessing these lights flying around. He's up kind of a good focal point, vantage point, and started noticing these lights, what he called drones, coming closer to his property and flying around. And he could never really make it out. He took a picture of one that had the lights off and looked like this concave, you know, shaped thing. And you couldn't see any, he goes, they're weird kind of drones. And I'm like, I don't think these are drones. So
this went on for weeks, and he called the police department, and they sent an officer down because he said, I'm going to shoot one. If this thing flies near my house again, I'm going to shoot it out of the sky. And they're like, sir, you Whoa. Can't do that. This is, you know,
yeah.
He goes, I will do it. If it's on my property, I'm taking it out. You know, we're going to send an officer down. We'll see what we can do. And so they send the officer down, and this is that night, and Tom's talking to him, and lo and behold, he's like, oh, here comes one now. So they're watching the light coming, and it starts coming over to Tom's property. So the police officer grabs his flashlight, and then the light shuts off. And he puts the flashlight in there looking, and they said this drone that was the size of a door, shaped like a diamond, completely silent, flew right over them. The police officer had the flashlight out like this. It flew right over the roof of Tom's house. And the police officer was like, mouth open wide, turns to Tom and goes, that's not a drone, man.
Oh, no.
He's like, he then tells Tom he's had all these UFO experiences growing up. And I thought it was odd whether the police had sent him because of those experiences or just the synchronicity of how the universe works that they sent him to go because of the UFO stuff. So when Tom talked to me about this, and I said, I want you to do something. And I know this is going to sound batshit crazy, but when you go out there, I want you to project at night in your backyard, when you're seeing those lights, that you want to know who's behind them. You want to know what these things are all about. So he's all right. So he did it for like three nights. And I was even questioning if he did it at all. He was just pulling my leg, but he said he did it. And then, one morning he couldn't sleep. He's typically up at 5 in the morning, leaving for work. It's like 3:30 summertime. So he goes out, can't sleep, and he's on the lawn. He's setting up the sprinkler for the day, and he instantly feels like he's being watched. So he's like, you know?
Yeah.
And he turns and he looks, and there's a telephone pole that's right near the house in the road. And he said, all of a sudden this thing goes, just looks as a Bigfoot just looks right at him. They make eye contact. He's like, drops the sprinkler and the sound. Ching. And he said, this thing turned, ran in two steps across the street and jumped over a stone wall. He heard a couple more steps and then it stopped, and he couldn't see it, but he goes, I could tell you, I could feel this thing looking at me. He goes, I knew it was looking right at me. And the way it moved, how fast it moved, he goes, I felt like this thing could be in my face in 3 seconds.
Oh.
He ran inside the house and called me. I was still sleeping. I think I had my phone was off and I didn't see the message till like 7 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was doing my podcast, Monsterland Podcast, and I randomly posted the Jacobs trail cam photo, which is from Pennsylvania, of what looks like a Bigfoot bending down to pick something up.
Okay.
I just posted it on Instagram, not talking to him, just random. He freaks out because he sees that post before he's talked to me, and he sends me a note and says, that's what I saw, a hunchback chimpanzee on two legs. That photo, how did you know to like, and that, you know, we ended up talking, he explained what happened. I'm like, I go, what are the odds that the lights that you're seeing, and then you go out and you project it, you want to see who's behind it, and a Bigfoot shows up in your backyard?
Oh.
I go, would that, there's that connection that yeah. we're looking, you know, there's another. So I'm trying to do those type of experiments, and they seem to just keep on happening. And I talk about marbles showing up at my house after I talked to Mike Patterson, these marbles just materializing
yep.
after I asked for them. So. There's something going on the consciousness level, but also in this reality of how they can manipulate things and matter. And it's pretty amazing.
I tell you what, let's take our break here, Ronnie. When we come back, we're going to tie some loose strings together and figure out where UFOs land in this entire thing. That's a little bit of a pun, but also on purpose. And we're going to talk about Ronnie's first UFO experience as well. We'll do that when we come back, folks. Our guest is Ronnie LeBlanc. The book we're talking about is his first book, Monsterland: Encounters with UFOs, Bigfoot, and Orange Orbs. When we come back, we'll talk about UFOs and aliens and how exactly they tie into Bigfoot. We'll do that next on the Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Our guest is Ronnie LeBlanc. We're talking all things Monsterland here. That's the name of the book, Encounters with UFOs, Bigfoot, and Orange Orbs. It's the first book of two that Ronnie LeBlanc has out there. We've got a link in the description of this program that will take you to both of Ronnie's books. The other one is Monsterland, Shamans, Sasquatch, Synchronicity, and High Strangeness. We'll take you to that link. Will take you to Ronnie's website, so you can get both of those books that are out there and available for you right now. Of course, the next season of Expedition Bigfoot is slated for early 2023 on Travel Channel and Discovery Plus, so you can check that out as well. Coming up in the new year. Ronnie, before the break, I teased about UFOs. We've been talking about it in and out throughout the program, yeah. But you obviously had a experience somewhere in there with UFOs. You've had a lot of different experiences throughout your life. Tell us a little bit about that first UFO experience that you had.
Yeah, the first one was really cool because we had gone, my dad's from Canada, from New Brunswick. Mm-hmm. And we had planned a family trip with my uncles, my cousins. And this was, I think, right around the same time that I had my experience in Monsterland with this invisible thing. But we were had these cabins that were on the beach. We were staying up in Canada. And me and my two cousins were just sitting on this huge flat rock. And I just remember, I loved just staring at the sky and the stars. And we were just sitting there in this, you know, again, in the 80s, there's satellites, obviously up there. But I just started noticing way up, like with the stars, these things starting to move around and then seeing things crisscrossing each other. And, you know, like my cousin at the time, she's a doctor now, was really trying to rationalize. No, those are just satellites. I go, how are satellites like crisscrossing each other and going in different, you know, like there's, mm-hmm. You realize that the sky was just alive with this activity. And it's like, there's, for me, it was just a really, almost a spiritual moment where you just realize we're not alone. There's something going on up here.
Yeah.
And that just kind of, I think, opened the door for me to, I've always been interested in, and I think we've also just been bombarded growing up with UFO movies and shows and different mm-hmm. things as well. You know, we can't ignore that fact, but for me, definitely abnormal in the sense of my, attraction to the subject, and just started to read everything I could about this stuff. And what was fascinating is learning about the UFOs here in Massachusetts, and some of the earliest UFO sightings took place in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. right? And so it was pretty fascinating to learn about some of these, like the Worcester airship sighting, which was right in the early 1900s, before there was really any pilots. There was about 27 licensed pilots in the entire world at that time. And this thing came, this light harassed up and down Massachusetts in different areas. So during a spat of UFO sightings in Central Mass in the 60s, Betty Andreessen was a resident in Leominster, had her first experience, and then she started having these abduction experiences. Raymond Fowler, who wrote The Andreessen Affair and these different books about her, during this spat of UFO sightings, he got calls from the state police asking if he takes Bigfoot reports. And he's like, I do now. they just seem to come in concert with the UFO stuff. So I always thought that was fascinating. And then as I started doing more research and learning about the work of Stan Gordon and Jonathan Keel, and, you know, like, there is a correlation, there's a connection with this cryptid activity, people seeing these dogmen, these Bigfoot creatures, and seeing these not only balls of light, but flying saucers, craft landing, and Bigfoots going in or coming out. I mean, there's stories that go prior to flights in the 1800s where Native Americans are bringing settlers to a cave to show them these beings, these crazy bears that have come out of the moons from time to time that land in the pasture, you know?
Yeah.
The one fascinating story that I just recently learned about the past year and a half or so ago was the Yakima tribe up in Washington State, where they were talking to J.W. Burns, who is a teacher, a researcher, actually coined the term Sasquatch, which was taken from a Native American word. And they shared with him, because they trust him over a period of time with the tribe, and shared this amazing story that they said was kept secret, because we can probably understand why now, but essentially this tall, hairy, man-like creature with glowing eyes came in to live with the tribe. And it communicated to them via telepathy. When any of the tribe members would get sick, this being could heal them. Hmm. And it lived with them for many years, until there was a point in time where this creature told them to take it to a place where it's going to pass. It's going to die, and it needs to go to a specific location. Excuse me. So this was communicated telepathically, and they brought this being to this spot. It passed away, and they watched. And as this, what would be described as a UFO, came out of the sky, descended, grabbed the body, and took off.
That would explain a lot. You know, one of the things that we talk about, or one of the things that I guess is the most disputed amongst all Bigfoot researchers, is what happens to the body when a Bigfoot dies or a Sasquatch dies. You know, we talk about, well, it's hard to prove that there's Bigfoot out there because there's no physical body out there in the woods.
Right.
And, you know, and that's, I guess, the most disputed thing.
There's a couple theories with that. You know, Jane Goodall, Maria, had interviewed her for our last season for the pre-show. And, you know, she postulated the fact that these beings have obviously eluded us for so long, because they are extremely intelligent. You know, there's no doubt that they do exist. She's talked to different tribal members in South America that have hunters that have seen these tailless monkeys on two legs walking around. Mm-hmm. So one of her beliefs is maybe they're so smart that they know that in order for their species to be able to survive, is that they have to hide their whereabouts, their identity, and even their bodies, their bones. Maybe they're burying their dead, mm-hmm. and we can't locate them. And that's an interesting aspect of what these tree structures might be. They could be almost like tombstones.
True.
The other theory is, you know, where I'm, you know, they're obviously leaving footprints, hair, DNA. And the interesting piece is human DNA keeps on coming up. And it's been dismissed as just contamination, but I think that's part of their DNA. Mm-hmm. why people describe them being and looking human more than animal. But I do believe, just based on people's stories and encounters, but even my own personal experiences with these things just kind of like vanishing in front of you, or Salt Fork State Park, seeing what in almost his shadow form, seeing the glowing eyes, but then seeing this thing just move without making a sound, like a spirit. Maybe they are interdimensional. That's why we can't find bones or body. They're popping in and out when they need to, and they can just take off. Sounds crazy as hell, but there's just a lot of evidence to support it. You know, if there weren't stories and encounters over the years, hundreds of years of this kind of adding up, and I do ask from time to time at conferences when I'm speaking and say, how many people believe this is flesh and blood and how many people believe it's something else that maybe more alien, more interdimensional? And people gravitate to that and they say that just makes more rational sense why we can't find bones or bodies, is that maybe they are what you're saying, that they're popping in and out. But there's also reports of bodies being recovered from forest fires. Texas in the 60s, there was a blue light that was flying around an Air Force base, and they shot at this blue light. And the next day, they went to the area where this was seen and shot at, and there was a Bigfoot creature on the ground that was dead. Again, are these just stories? I've heard stories of soldiers, military police on Air Force bases, military bases with starlight scopes for night vision, and told by the commanding officers that they may see beings, tall, hairy, Chewbacca-looking beings walking around the base, and not to engage, but just observe. Wow. So I think they're aware of them. I think they're, I don't know, maybe we've had it in front of us all along with Chewbacca, Bigfoot's an alien,
And you brought it up a little bit just a few minutes ago with aliens in Hollywood. You almost wonder if things have been inserted into movies, and this has been a long theory, that things have been inserted in movies to condition us to get ready for eventualities that may come up in real life, so that we are conditioned to accept things just readily as they come up in society. Should you run into something like Bigfoot, you wouldn't necessarily be as afraid as you might normally be. Although I can't imagine you wouldn't be afraid of Bigfoot if you ran into it.
Right. I mean, I do believe that. I've worked for the Boston Herald, for example, one of the longest running newspapers. I was a director of advertising, but I sat in editorial meetings. There is a sense of control on what information can go out. We don't know who's making those calls, but I've had things that have gotten nope, or this will come out. There's definitely, I've heard about this from different people, that particular agencies, right? CIA or whoever, will work with different production companies on stories and making sure, let's talk about this and make sure it goes in this direction, mm-hmm. and maybe guiding that narrative. Mm-hmm. So there definitely seems to be some interest in controlling that story. And now, back in the day, UFO researchers were being whacked.
Yeah.
Showing up. It was like a very risky business, where now it seems a little bit more like the funnel's kind of like opened up a little bit, like, okay, let's see where this goes. It'd be interesting to see how, 5 years from now, where we're at. Are we still kind of swimming around with any day now, or have we come to this new paradigm shift of thought,
Let me ask you this, Ronnie, and we can kind of close with this question here. And that's this, in an era where the government kind of leaks a few videos and calls it disclosure, or soft disclosure, kind of opens the tap a little bit and gives you a little taste. And then the Navy comes along and says, well, no more videos because of security risks.
Right.
What do you make of the era we're in right now? Do you believe that there is such a thing as disclosure, or such a thing as the video, as the government saying, you also see government regulation of Bigfoot areas. Do you really truly believe the government wants to play ball on the paranormal, or do you believe it's just glad handing the general public on the paranormal?
I think that at the end of the day, government is made up of people. It's made up of, you know, you're going to have groups that are going to want to see this for whatever reason, make sure that this stays this way. If this thing is an alien, it would make sense why there's been cover up around Bigfoot. I've heard of stories of forest rangers hiding tracks, hiding footprints that people have discovered or having filing reports. So I think there's groups of people within the government that want to see things come out and that will help bring it out. Messengers, if you will. And I think there's an interesting thing where there's a people want the truth. They want to know, like, we're grown up. Tell us what's up. For me personally, when it comes to UFOs, I think the reason why we haven't had that full-fledged disclosure where UFOs landed on the lawn. We had the 1952, they flew over Washington, D.C., over the Capitol. But I do believe, and I've been saying this for a little while, that there's something with the concept of time and their ability to manipulate or control time, because people have experienced missing time with their abductions. Maybe that's that one piece of that one piece of this puzzle, that if people learn that these things can control time and manipulate time, would be terrifying, would be, you know, Orson Welles type scenario. Yeah. I do think that, because now it's like, okay, who's God? Who's controlling our reality? What is this? So yeah, I think, you know, we keep on hearing that they have wreckage or metamaterials to these craft. I think that's that next phase. If that happens, then that's a game changer. And supposedly this has been talked about a lot.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that really transpires.
Sure. Tell people about the podcast.
Yeah. So the podcast, I stopped doing it right after season one came out for Expedition Bigfoot. It's called Monsterland. I was, my partner was, Maddie Blake from Curse of Oak Island. He now does, Beyond, Oak Islands, TV show for history. And the idea was really to try to use it as a way to kind of talk about some of the stories in Monsterland, and interview other people, other researchers that kind of fall within this realm with UFOs and Bigfoot. And so we've had Bob Gimelin on, we've had a bunch of great guests. And then it was a lot of fun too. Maddie's a stand-up comedian. But with the show, it was important to kind of make sure that I showed the seriousness of what we're doing with the research for the show. It just, time-wise, it was a blast doing it, and it probably would do it again in the future. But we put a pause after the show came out, but you can still go check out episodes and everything, but it was a lot of fun and an extension of the book. So it was a fun experience.
Good, good, good. Where can people find it?
So if you go to, you can find it on Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio. All the episodes are up there. We did about 4 seasons of it, and there's some different video episodes as well as audio.
Good, good, good. And, of course, we'll have links to Ronnie's website, ronnieleblanc.com, up on the link in the description of the show, so you can check out all things Ronnie. Again, 2 books out there that you need to check out. The one that that I read over the weekend, Monsterland, Encounters with UFOs, Bigfoot, and Orange Orbs. Folks, this book alone is so full of interesting facts, not just on what goes on in the Lemister area in Monsterland in itself. One of the interesting things, you got me in an argument with my doctor, actually.
Oh, no.
Over the weekend. My doctor is a huge, my foot doctor, who works on my Charcot foot. It actually had to do with, you remember the time travel photo?
With
the cell phone. He is such a skeptic. Okay. I tried to tell him about the woman was actually interviewed, the woman who had the, if I remember right from the book, you'd said the woman was interviewed who had the prototype. I think it was 1938 that had the prototype. And if I remember right from the book, you said there were 7 of them. Is that what it was?
That was the story, supposedly, yeah, that there were testing out these phones, and I don't know if that data is correct, but there's rumor that was definitely like, hey, they found this thing and let's make a story around it,
right?
You know,
right. So yeah. I'm discussing this in the office with him, and he's such a skeptic. I love Dr. Schuster to death, by the way. He's saved my foot over and over again. But he said, well, okay, come on, Tim. They were trying to make a cell phone in 1938. I said, you doubt human ingenuity, Doc? Come on. I said, we're here in 2022, right, and you're saving my foot. I mean, normally I'd right. lost this foot, you know, if it were 1938, I'd probably be dead by now. So, you know, in 2022, you're saving my foot. I said, so why would you doubt that in 1938 we had radio technology? They just couldn't put together radio technology with landline towers, right? It makes right. sense to me. Yeah. And yet just a small time later in 1973, we had cell phone technology. So to me, that makes sense. Everything about yeah. that theory makes sense, right? And again, go get the book Monsterland to figure out what it is we're talking about. But my doctor and I, as he's taking off my cast and looking at my foot and saying, hey, everything looks great, blah, 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 looks at me and goes, okay, I'm really perplexed about this. And I said, Doc, next week, I'm bringing in this book right here in my grubby little hands, and I'm showing you the passage so you can see what exactly I'm talking about. Because although I woefully probably described it to him, for sure, it's very solid information. It wasn't necessarily an argument. It was a friendly conversation, Ronnie, but it was a fun conversation nonetheless.
Awesome.
So yeah, there's a lot of good stuff here in Monsterland that, is a lot of good information, a lot of good history. And on top of it, there's a very interesting theory that Ronnie has at the end of the book that I want you guys to check out. And it has to do with Bigfoot, has to do with UFOs and with these orange orbs. It ties everything together. And it's very solid. And I want you guys to check out that theory as well. So check out
the book.
Absolutely. Again, Ronnie LeBlanc, our guest here on Darkness Radio, want you guys to check out Monsterland Encounters with UFOs, Bigfoot, and Orange Orbs. We'll have that link in the description of the program. Folks, want to thank you so much for joining us this week for a very good week of Darkness Radio. I want to remind you to take care of yourself and each other. Go out this weekend, do something good for your fellow man. There's people down in the South, again, especially in Florida, that due to the recent hurricane have had their cities torn apart, that are looking for help. It's real easy to find an organization that's out there helping those people. Just take a couple of dollars and a little bit of time and help those people there. There's people in your own community that could use your help. Winter is coming. People need jackets. They need coats. They need help with shelter. So you can do that and just take a quick moment to help somebody in your own community. People are needing help towards the holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, the holidays, all different types of holidays are coming up, and people are in need. So go ahead and take a moment to help those people. Just do it to be a good person. And we encourage you here at Darkness Radio to just reach out, be a better person, and help your community. And if we all pitch in, we all leave this world a little bit better than what we found it. Just a little message from your buddy Timmy and the folks here at Darkness Radio. Folks, we also want to encourage you to patronize our sponsor, Microdose Gummies, who was nice enough to sponsor our program this week. Again, go to microdose.com, save 30% off Microdose Gummies on your first visit, and get free shipping as well. Microdose.com as a reminder there. We'll see you next week for another great week of the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.